You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
And finally, we need to talk about the renewable energy sector, because a large-scale cyber espionage campaign has been targeting primarily renewable energy and industrial technology organizations and has discovered to have been active since at least 2019, targeting over 15 entities worldwide. This is actually rather important because as we are moving towards different types of energy to supplement nuclear, coal, and other things, if these come under attack, there may be a public perception that gets out there that says, well, these things keep going down. They're completely unviable. The technology is not good, which quite frankly isn't necessarily the case. We've seen a lot of successful, deployments of things like solar and wind and all of that, but if they're susceptible to cyber attack, like a nuclear power plant or a coal plant, it's never, never good. Now, this malicious campaign was discovered by security researcher William Thomas. Basically, he works for Curated Intelligence. And so essentially they employed open source intelligence techniques to essentially find this. Now, Thomas's analysis revealed that the attacker uses a custom quote-unquote mailbox toolkit, which is an unsophisticated phishing package deployed on the actor's infrastructure, meaning inside the networks of these businesses, as well as legitimate websites to compromise host phishing pages. In other words, they're trying to get you to pages that might look like an Office 365 login, but they're actually malicious. We see that when campaigns roll around for Congress, Senate, and the president, we see a whole bunch of intelligence operators out there trying to send phishing emails to the various campaign staffers to try to get them to log in to what looks like Office 365, but it's just stealing their credentials. Now, in this case, the phishing campaign's goal was to steal, as I mentioned, the login credentials from those working for renewable energy firms, environmental protection organizations, and industrial technology in general. And some of the organizations that were targeted by these include Schneider Electric, which is a massive player. Honeywell, obviously, is huge, too. Huawei, one of the largest tech makers in China. HiSilicom, Telecom Romania, the University of Wisconsin, obviously a research university, as is California State University, as is Utah State University, the Kardzali Hydroelectric Power Station in Bulgaria, CEZ Electro in Bulgaria, the California Air Resources Board, Morris County Municipal Utilities Authority, I'm not sure where that is, Morris County, heads up, Taiwan Forestry Research Institute, Carbon Disclosure Program, and Cerema, which apparently is an Italian recycling firm. Now, Mr. Thomas couldn't attribute this campaign to any specific actor, but evidence points to two specific clusters of activity. One known as APT-28 or Advanced Persistent Threat 28, also known as Fancy Bear, that's out of Russia. I've talked about Fancy Bear, especially during the 2016 election. They were essentially caught breaking into the DNC and the DCCC and think tanks and everything else to collect all of this kind of information. And also one from a hacking outfit known as Kony, which essentially is out of North Korea. North Korea has really been stepping up their game in the last decade, not just for theft, but now also for espionage as well. Also, the Google Threat Analysis Group researchers have recently found phishing activity attributed to APT-28, aka Fancy Bear, which uses several of the same types of website domains for phishing attacks that were targeting these renewable energy sources as well. And so obviously that is a huge, huge problem that we have. And the last thing we want are these large organizations to go down. And when you're looking at things, and I talked about this in my last radio show, like Ukraine, when we're starting to see APT-28 or Fancy Bear start to come out to play, that's obviously a huge problem. We are seeing cyber attacks launched against Ukraine as a goal to destabilize that. That was my last radio show. So this is a huge problem that we've got out there. But those were your breaches of the week. A ton of stuff going on, even though I'm a few days short on this and just recovering from the flu. So there you go. Those were your breaches of the week. Hopefully you weren't affected.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the Deep Dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a Deep Dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Again, that's Nick A. ESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin.
And this week's deep dive is about the Olympics in China. And obviously, most people like the Olympics, whether we're watching it or not, whether you're sports fans or not. It's great to see the world come together and just compete openly and peacefully, you know, at the Olympic Games now every 2 years. When I was a kid, it was every 4 years. But these Olympics, like the Sochi Olympics when Russia was hosting it, are already rife with cybersecurity problems. And that's what we're talking about today. And so there's a couple of different articles and stories I want to talk to you about in this vein, because I think it's just so important to understand that what we have here in the United States and many other countries is obviously a lot more secure than what China does. Now, the first one is actually coming from a recent article in Bloomberg. And essentially, here's what's going on. China has basically promised the world's top athletes access to a partially unfettered internet during the Olympics starting on February 4th, and essentially they're going to drop the great firewall that blocks services like Facebook and YouTube at official venues and hotels. But cybersecurity experts like myself are essentially sounding the alarm that there are reasons to exercise caution. If you didn't know, China really censors their internet. And essentially, when you're there, you cannot get access to things like Facebook and Google and all of that if you are using Chinese-based mobile phones and Chinese-based equipment. And that is something that essentially the world has seen. And so Chinese companies, in this case, that specialize in data collection, surveillance, and artificial intelligence, are among the official sponsors and suppliers for the Winter Olympics. Washington, D.C. and its allies have accused some of the corporations providing networking and data management, including Huawei Technology and iFly Tech Company, of potentially being used for espionage or surveillance of minorities in Xinjiang. If you recall, there's the Uyghur population in that part of China that is essentially acting as slave labor while they are heavily surveilled by the government. Now, Huawei and its peers deny those allegations, but cybersecurity consultants warn that those systems will subject athletes to the same kind of surveillance, movement tracking, and monitoring that most Chinese citizens deal with. And that is absolutely true. When you're thinking about this, just even sitting here in the United States, our phone is a sea of sensors. It knows where we're going. It knows how fast we're going. It knows our GPS location, all these different kinds of things. And now you've got an autocratic government, you know, in China that is essentially has total control of the internet infrastructure that monitors and tracks these kinds of things. Now, among the concerns is the risk that state actors or criminals could use the designated Wi-Fi hotspots to snoop on private communications or even install malware and other vulnerabilities onto personal devices that in turn could do things like open up contacts, both sporting and political, to subsequent attack. And so there you go. Essentially what they're saying is any athlete or journalist or anyone that is connecting to the Wi-Fi could potentially have a compromised mobile phone after shortly connecting to the wireless. We saw that during the Sochi Olympics in Sochi, Russia, 2014, I believe. And so there you go. Now, a growing number of delegations are taking that potential threat seriously. Australia, Belgium, the Netherlands, and Canada are among the delegations that are advising athletes to keep their devices off Wi-Fi networks and to use burner phones if possible. That is excellent advice, and that is something that I have practiced when I have traveled to China for work myself. And the United States themselves has issued a warning to American athletes that their devices may also be compromised with malicious software with unknown consequences for future use. Meaning, if they are able to get an infection in there that infects the hardware in the phone, then you can wipe your iPhone or your Android out a thousand different times, but the infection will remain that could possibly surveil you or capture your data. Now, the Beijing committee has rejected the reported advice given to athletes, saying, and I quote, "This is completely groundless and these concerns are wholly unnecessary." The committee also said that China has passed several cybersecurity laws that provided protections for privacy and data security for its citizens and foreign visitors. And we will get to that after we dive into this, because I've got the laws and I've got analysis on it. And you are definitely going to want to hear this, because they have definitely passed laws, but they don't do what a lot of their citizens think they do. And we're going to go into that. Now, that aside, the game's official antivirus software provider is known as Qianxing, will run a central hub offering, quote, "full coverage and high quality network security," according to the company via their statement. Its majority shareholder, Qisheng Dong is the co-founder of Qihoo 360, which is an antivirus platform out of China. And essentially, they were sanctioned in 2020. Qian Xin will have visibility over data that crosses networks, including overseas traffic, according to researchers. In an analysis of Qian Xin's mobile protection software, the outfit Internet 2.0 reported that, and I quote, a significant amount of user data is being collected by the software. Xi Shengdong parted ways with Qihoo in 2019. And essentially, that is a lot of what we see. You know, when I've been in China to essentially protect U.S. corporate interests there, oftentimes when we see these applications being installed into various computers, they don't have the same standards for things like malware that we do. So, for example, malware, one of the core definitions here in the United States is if you install a program and it also installs another program without your direct knowledge and consent, meaning it doesn't prompt you saying, hey, the program you just downloaded also wants to install this program and this is what it does. Do you accept yes or no? That's not there in China. And what we've seen is when you've installed one program, that program installs a whole bunch of others that are doing a whole bunch of things. And when we put threat detection systems on those systems that are coming from the United States, those start lighting up like a Christmas tree, basically saying, oh my God, everything's infected. And we've literally had situations like that. I have personally been in Beijing on that exact assignment and seen an entire office infected thanks to these kinds of applications. Now, on top of this, meaning the Bloomberg article that I was just referencing, we have more news from the AFP, because the app, meaning the app that all attendees of the upcoming Beijing Olympics have to use to get into the games, have encryption flaws that could allow personal information to leak. And so there you go. The, quote, simple but devastating flaw in the encryption of the My 2022 app, which is used to monitor COVID and is mandatory for athletes, journalists, and other attendees of the games in China's capital, could allow health information, voice messages, and other data to leak, according to Jeffrey Knockle, the author of the report for Citizen Lab out of Toronto, the University of Toronto specifically, that talked about these flaws in that app. Now, the International Olympic Committee responded to the report by saying that users can disable the app's access to parts of their phone and that assessments from two unnamed cybersecurity organizations, quote, confirm there are no critical vulnerabilities. We don't know who they're talking with. We also don't know who the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, basically hired to do this, if they hired anybody. So, I quote, the user is in control over what the app can access on their device. That is according to the IOC. And essentially, they also added that installing it on cell phones isn't required. And I quote, as accredited personnel can log into the health monitoring system on the web page instead, meaning you don't have to install the app as long as you're going to the web page and doing that. But you can also have extensions and other malicious code downloaded from a website onto a laptop, onto a mobile device, onto anything that you're using to connect to it. So that may not necessarily be a good stopgap measure. Now, the committee said that it asked Citizen Labs for its report to, quote, better understand those concerns. Now, Citizen Labs said that it notified the Chinese Organizing Committee for the Games of the issues in early December, and it gave them 15 days to respond and 45 days, to fix the problem, and they received no reply. And I quote, China has a history of undermining encryption technology to perform political censorship and surveillance. As such, it is reasonable to ask whether the encryption of this app was intentionally sabotaged for the surveillance purposes or whether the defect was born of developer negligence. He also continued, and I quote, the case for the Chinese government sabotaging My 2022's encryption is problematic. And that essentially is it. Whoever holds the encryption keys essentially can unlock it. And so if I don't have the encryption keys and I steal your phone, I can't access the app. But if that app is phoning home somewhere to wherever it is, let's say to the Chinese government, and they actually have the encryption keys, they can decrypt that traffic. That's the understanding. So they can say, oh, yes, we have encryption and the app is encrypted and it's encrypting your data. But again, it's like locking your doors at night and giving the key to the potential burglar or the person that just wants to like walk into your house and root around your fridge and watch your TV and, you know, check out the mail that you have sitting on your dining room table when you bring it in, you know, those kinds of things. That's what we're talking about here. And here's the nuts and bolts of the situation. The My22 app does not authenticate SSL certificates, meaning that essentially they are using self-signed certificates that essentially the government has complete access and authority over. Now, if you're not familiar with what this is, and I'm, again, obviously not trying to get technical on you, think about when you go to the bank. If you basically log into, like, you know, www.yourbank.com, wherever you go, you see that little green lock. That is SSL encryption. You are establishing an encrypted connection between your computer and the bank. That is known as SSL encryption. Now, as a step, the bank goes to a third-party provider to validate that their certificate isn't self-generated by the bank, meaning they're just not doing it themselves. They're getting it from a known third-party SSL authority, and that is what's actually validating that their encryption is good. That is not what this app is doing. They're basically just doing it themselves. You know, meaning if I were to create my own lock on my own door, you know, without, let's say, buying it from a third party, I'm just running the assumption that my lock will be as good as, like, a Schlage or, you know, take your pick on any other lock. It's the only one I can think of brand wise off the top of my head. That's a professional lock maker. And by virtue of that, I know that when I see that logo from them, I've got an actual good lock, because that's literally what they do, as opposed to me just trying to weld my own. That's what we're talking about here. Now, while the app is transparent about the medical information it collects as part of China's efforts to screen COVID-19 cases, the report from Citizen Lab said, and I quote, "It is unclear with whom or which organizations it shares information." And that obviously is a huge, huge problem, you know, just to continue with that. Now, the My22 app also contains a list called, I quote unquote, illegalwords.txt, meaning a text file. You can open it with, like, Notepad in Windows. Of basically, it has illegal words.txt of politically sensitive phrases in China, many of which relate to Chinese political situations, or Tibet, or the Uyghur Muslim minority situation, and all of that. Now, these words that are basically listed out in this text include things like CCP evil, meaning the Chinese Communist Party evil, and Xi Jinping, China's president, although Citizen Lab said it was unclear if the list was actively being used for censorship purposes. And I've talked about that actually before. I can't remember if it was my last radio show or on my daily podcast and video about this, but essentially China was building in apps on smartphones that had lists that essentially, if you tried to, like, you know, message out or text out Free Tibet or something, it would actually prevent you from sending that information. And here we have in this app, basically, as it's being looked at by researchers, an entire list of words that China loves to ban or loves to censor. Now, because of these features, the app may actually violate both Google and Apple's policies around smartphone software and, quote, also China's own laws and national standards pertaining to privacy protection, providing potential avenues for future redress. Now, I think that that's really important, because Google and Apple will do absolutely nothing whatsoever about this. This thing could be wide open, drive a truck through the security holes, or it literally could be visibly saying, hey, I'm copying out all your data, and Google and Apple are not going to do anything, because Google and Apple have been actively going after the Chinese market, which, obviously, China being the most populous country in the world with an absolute ton of wealth concentrated in a handful of major cities, Google and Apple want that business. And so they have been kowtowing to China for years over this. So don't expect this app to be pulled at all by Google or Apple. And finally, I think it's important, as I mentioned before, to understand the perspective of China's cybersecurity laws, and they're basically there to support the goals of the autocratic state, not actually protect the citizens. And a lot of this is coming from an article, just a fantastic article by Lauren Maranto of the Center for Strategic and International Studies, writing this in 2020, and she completely nails this and put it in a way that, quite frankly, I don't think I could as succinctly, even though I'm sitting here bloviating to you on the radio. But here's what's going on. From the Center for Strategic and International Studies. In June 2017, China implemented a new cybersecurity law, which now acts as the baseline for China's present-day guidelines. Initially passed in 2016, the law was created to provide guidelines for maintaining network security, protecting the rights and interests of individuals and organizations, and promoting the secure development of technology. Sounds pretty good so far. but let's dive in, because the law requires that data is stored within China and that organizations and network operators submit to government-conducted security checks. Now, critics of the law argue that requiring companies to submit information for spot checks further increases the risk of a security breach or loss of information. The ambiguous nature of this law allows the government more space to request and control information, while also leading to misunderstandings within businesses as to what actually constitutes an acceptable use of data. Although China made additions to its cybersecurity and data protection laws, each new step continues to lend more power to the government and the Communist Party of China. An extension of the 2016 cybersecurity law is the Personal Information Security Specification, and that was adopted in May of 2018 to provide guidance on how personal data should be stored and used. And here's where I think this gets interesting and even more concerning. An article published in The Diplomat in 2019 referred to the specification as a, quote, compliance nightmare due to the ambiguity between what is simply a suggested protocol for storing user data and what is the actual law. To address the exportation of personal information, the Cyberspace Administration of China, which is China's main internet regulator, published draft regulations for limiting the transport of collected data within the borders of the People's Republic of China for public comments. Now, these draft measures detail the methods in which the transfer of data will be regulated, including the reporting of and pre-approval of external data transfers and thorough investigation measures on the types of information being handled. The updated regulations are a much more extensive and invasive version of the 2016 law I just mentioned, expanding the government's reach to investigate any organization rather than those that potentially pose an immediate risk to national security. So essentially, the Chinese government is basically saying we can go anywhere we want and we can investigate any organization and it can be for any reason. We don't just have to deem you as a potential risk to the state in China. We can just look whenever we want. Now, by demanding access to any data collected and stored in China, the updated regulations force foreign companies, think U.S. companies as well, based in China to comply with its investigative measures, leaving intellectual property and private information vulnerable to government abuse. And that is a very serious problem that we have. Intellectual property theft that is being ripped off from countries around the globe and then cheaply produced in China for much less is the name of the game here. I literally have a friend that is a graphic designer. His name is Adam. And essentially, he designed a whole bunch of designs for this company, and then that company that produced it here in the United States turned around and found that essentially somebody in China had stolen all of Adam's designs and essentially were producing them for dirt cheap on much cheaper materials and then selling them essentially for a fraction of what the actual company paid Adam to do, which was to create intellectual property for them, the AKA artwork. This is a huge problem that we've got. You know, so by demanding access to any data collected and stored in China, the updated regulations force foreign companies, and I'm saying this again, based in China, to comply with this. That's the problem. And these fears continue to be reinforced as numerous media outlets have reported widespread data leakage. So earlier in 2020, state media in China reported that 468 million pieces of personal data had been sold to small financial lenders, obviously heightening tensions internally among Chinese consumers. And so the inadequacy of consumer protections and weak cybersecurity capabilities leaves companies more susceptible to leakages and privacy breaches, which then likely breeds distrust among consumers and foreign investors in China. This distrust is further fueled by the increasing presence of surveillance technology across China. And you can go talk about the Uyghurs in that vein. And I've done, like I said, reporting on them about how they are mass surveilled. But when you're looking at something like the Chinese government collecting all of this data, we can look at things like TikTok, which is owned by a company called ByteDance Beijing. And as they are collecting information on foreigners, AKA tens of millions of youth, meaning under the age of 18 here in the United States, citizens that are on TikTok, the Chinese government is getting all of that information. And so look at the microcosm of the Olympics. We are all at the Olympics, meaning countries around the globe to peacefully compete. And when we are sitting in the infrastructure of that foreign government that has actual laws, as I've just laid out for you, since 2016 on data mining absolutely everybody outside of China, as China is becoming a massive surveillance state, that has to be deeply concerning, not just to the organizing Olympic committees, not just to the various committees of the Olympics here in the United States and elsewhere, not just to the athletes and the trainers or their families that are communicating with them as they are competing over there. This should be a concern for the world. What China is showing us in 2022 here with having these kinds of apps is that essentially they are going to do their own thing. They are going to data mine us. They are going to be adversarial to a free and open internet where we have the ability to speak our minds and have the comfort of privacy and anonymity, something the Chinese government is actively working to remove from the internet. And I wrote an article back in 2018 about the bifurcation that we are seeing of the internet. And by 2028, I wrote this article in Forbes. You can go literally, it was called Bisecting the Future, if I recall, and just Google my name and that in Forbes, and it will come up about essentially how we are going to see by 2028 an authoritarian-based, non-private, fully surveilled internet coming out of China and countries that are considered vassal states to China through their Belt and Road Initiative versus a free, open, and unfettered internet here in the West, meaning the United States, Canada, Europe, Australia, etc.
And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Again, that's Nick A. ESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.